Hey, friend. Welcome to Houston Made, a show where I, Rusty Gates, get to talk with local Houston-based entrepreneurs and business owners about what it's like to be in the middle of that journey and selfishly gain insights as I build my own businesses. I try to say it in every episode, but I want to say it up top this time. Thank you for listening to this show. While getting to have these conversations really is a privilege, there's a lot of work that goes into making them happen and into packaging it in the best format possible to share with the world. So when I see that people are actually downloading and streaming the show, it really means the world to me. And you're hearing this right now, which means you're one of those people. So thank you, because you're awesome. This week, I got to sit down with my new friend, Rudy Rasmus, to talk about his very unique journey into all kinds of things. On top of co-pastoring St. John's downtown in Houston, he also owns Through Good Coffee in the Heights, Soul Tacos, and is leading the nonprofit Bread of Life, which he has done for the last 30 years. He's an author, speaker, a professor, and at 65 years old, he is looking forward to the next 30 years with no plans for retirement. I have hoped to sit down with Rudy since the beginning of the show, since the beginning of season one. So I was thrilled when he had some time open up to sit down and talk with me and share a little bit of his story. And it's a great conversation. I'm stoked to share it with you. That said, I want to throw out a brief caution that we do get into the topic of suicide in the latter half of the episode as Rudy shares a bit of his story and some of the dark days that he's experienced. But overall, it's a very encouraging podcast and I walked away feeling really great about it. So listen in as Rudy and I discuss the influences in his youth that drew him into entrepreneurship, how a chance meeting at a funeral changed the trajectory of his life, and why retirement isn't an option on the table for him. Rudy Rasmus, you are an author, a pastor, many would say a humanitarian. You have founded nonprofits, an entrepreneur, a real estate developer, a professor, and many more, all of these things. Thank you so much for, genuinely, thank you so much for the time and for sitting down with me. One of the reasons why I am so excited to talk with you, I think, is I do a lot of things, and that's how I've built my life. I want to do a lot of things. I really enjoy hanging out with as many people as possible in these cameras, these microphones, the real estate work. It gives me a chance to step into people's lives for a little bit, and I maybe can't walk with them forever, but to get to do it. But I think I've built this life because it gives me the opportunity to do so many things. Why do you do all these things? You got opportunity just presents itself and you go, I got to do that. Or are you similarly driven to say, I want to have fun. And these seem like good things to do.
Yeah. First of all, it's good to be here.
Thank you.
And the short version is so in my faith tradition, somebody years ago came up with a spiritual gifts questionnaire.
Mm-hmm.
I realized my spiritual gift wasn't on the questionnaire, and it's hanging out.
Mm.
And really, that's what I do.
Yeah.
You know, I think what really shapes who I am as a person. And I think what often happens with a lot of people is we don't factor in the years that we don't remember.
Hmm. Okay.
But when I really, you know, over the years now, I'm 65, so I've had time to reflect on a whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, but what I really come to the conclusion of is that most of who I am right now was shaped between my fourth birthday and my 12th birthday.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, early on, I had an aunt who owned a grocery store in the hood.
Okay.
And she was like my grandmother, too. She raised my dad. She was his older sister.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched her go to work.
Mm-hmm.
She was a church lady, and she ran a grocery store.
Yeah.
And they also owned a bar. So she was a church lady who owned a bar, ran a grocery store, and managed the lunchroom at a middle school for about 50 years.
And that in the time frame
that would have been somewhat rare.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I feel like you could swing a cat out here and hit one of us entrepreneurs that's got 12 things going on.
Yeah.
Like, we're all over the place now. But I feel like to have that many things in that generation going on, that's a lot.
And to be a woman.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm riding with her. And I realized that, man, you know, she has a diverse life. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I've always done, and you probably can tell by the beard and a piercing.
Sure.
Yeah. Is I've just always done me.
Mm.
And, you know, I was thinking, so I own a little coffee shop in the Hikes.
Mm-hmm.
And
through good,
and
right?
Through good. And it's probably the most expensive hobby.
Yeah.
You know, because to make money in specialty coffee, you know, it's really, it's a science. Mm-hmm. And most of the science is in roasting.
Okay.
But I remember that being, you know, I was telling someone, I said, you know, this is my 21st business.
What?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It was crazy, you know?
Yeah.
It also points to the fact that the 1 through 20, hell, ain't make no money.
Yeah, that's true. That.
You know, but along the way, I have always been wired to do more than one thing. Mm-hmm. And it's probably watching my aunt and then watching my dad.
Mm.
My dad always believed in... and having more than one stream of income.
And he had a hotel, right?
Well, we actually built that together.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Let me tell you a short story.
Please.
I'm 5 years old. Mm-hmm. And one day my dad brings a set of blueprints. Now, in 1961, a black man with a set of blueprints is unusual.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
But he brings a set of blueprints home and he puts them on the table.
Mm-hmm.
And he proceeds to tell me how we're going to build this little motel and we're going to make money on other people's pain.
Okay.
Right. So he explains, the process to me. We rent our rooms by the hour.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we cater our clientele to the sex trade.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was 23 years old, I built the building.
Okay.
Yeah. Moved to Houston. Went into the construction development business, got a bank loan, had the land already, and built a 10-unit motel.
Mm-hmm.
An office and a residence.
Yeah.
To live in. And from there, Rusty, I tell you, I started a crazy part of my life and mm-hmm. career. Kind of fell into darkness, hell head first,
mm-hmm.
But I was raised to run it.
Yeah, you
know, 5 years old. So here I am. I'm 5 years old. I get the blueprints.
Yeah.
I'm 22, 23. I build it.
Yeah. Realize that dream, as twisted as it may have been, brought that to fruition. Yeah.
Right. Back to so that thing. It was my dad. Interesting guy,
mm-hmm.
Was extremely entrepreneurial, but always financed my dreams.
Mm.
So whatever I put in front of him,
yeah,
he said, "Hey, let's do it."
Yeah,
find a way. And he was resourceful, you know. He was white collar, you know, in his professional career. He's an accountant, but had a kind of a hustler's heart.
Mm-hmm.
So in between. He just kind of raised me to do the same.
Finding angles.
And finding, I think the key has always been doing what I felt was the best thing for me to do at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, you know, you put that together over a number of years, mm-hmm. and you have a string of enterprises and... a lot of stories and experiences.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've done a lot. So I know, obviously, you guys lead St. John here, you and your wife.
Mm-hmm.
It's Juanita, right?
Juanita.
Yeah. And you are co-pastors here and you lead this beautiful community. But the way that I understand the story is that she's a big part of that kind of redemption narrative of moving. And it wasn't immediate, though, right? Of how I'm interested in how. You have all these skills and you're putting it towards, hey, we're going to make money this way. Yeah. And morally questionable, if not just morally wrong. And do the skills change as you go through that process, or does the heart behind the same skills change?
Yeah. You know, I tell people all the time that skills are transferable. Mm-hmm. Gifts are too. Mm-hmm. And if you take the, you take the gift and skill and you apply that gift and skill to anything connected to your heart, it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's going to manifest too.
Yeah.
Whether it's on the spectrum, on the dark side of the spectrum or the light side of the mm-hmm. spectrum.
Sure.
You know, what my wife did was moved my moral compass mm-hmm. on that spectrum.
Sure.
More towards the light. So when she married me, it was in complete darkness, mm-hmm. which was the mystery of those who knew her, why she connected with me. Mm-hmm. But my wife had this, she had the ability to see a little glimmer of light in my heart. Mm-hmm. And the one thing she knew is that even though I was in a really bad business, bad line of business, mm-hmm. That she personally was safe with me. And I tell you, so when I first met her, so I married the first woman I trusted. Mm. That's what remember, I'm raised to run a sexually oriented business.
Yeah.
In my formative years, mm-hmm. and that's my orientation, you know?
Yeah.
And so I'm raised in a dark vacuum. Mm-hmm. But Juanita, when I met her, she had, as a matter of fact, I met her at a funeral. Mm. We say it's the best funeral we've ever been to.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but I met her at a funeral, and when I saw her, literally she, you know, you hear this a lot, but I saw this light.
Yeah.
You know, and I made sure I met her before that funeral was concluded. Well, before the gathering and stuff mm-hmm. concluded. And once we started like connecting, the voice, I had this voice that, mm-hmm. That now I know is God's voice talking to me, but mm-hmm. I wasn't a believer, so I didn't identify the source. But the voice told me early in our courtship to never do anything that would cause her not to trust me.
Mm. Which, that's great advice.
Great advice.
Yeah.
So much so that I walked away from her. She walked away from me. And we expected to never get together.
Yeah.
A year later, the voice returned and said, call Juanita.
Mm.
I did. And a few months later, we were married.
Yeah.
Yeah. But what we agreed on was I would go to church with her.
Yeah.
And I wasn't a church guy.
No. No, it wasn't a part of it. Yeah. So even though you saw some of that with your aunt,
mm-hmm.
it just had never really.
Yeah, it never connected. As a matter of fact, I would tell her often that, you know, this is nice. I can see mm-hmm. that it's meaningful for you, but I don't believe it.
Yeah. And then some of the reading I did just in research of this said that I guess the pastor started reaching out to you. Was there kind of a mentor relationship that then started to make it click? Yeah.
Man, his name is Kirby John Caldwell. Mm-hmm. Fascinating guy. And I remember the first day. So my wife researched churches mm-hmm. when we married. And she had read up on his story, being sort of a business guy that turned to religion. And thought we could connect. So we went to church there one Sunday, and by the second Sunday, he introduced himself to me.
Mm-hmm.
And in the first couple of months, one day called me up to read the liturgy. Mm-hmm. That's what they did in Methodist churches back in the day. I didn't know it. And sure. And I thought it was odd, you know, but the building didn't fall in when I stood up.
Yeah.
So,
they're like, okay.
But I continued to attend that church, and he continued to befriend me, you know, in a very intentional way, of which I appreciate it, because my dad had taught me to never trust preachers and church
sure.
people either.
Yeah.
They say they're basically full of shit and they're just saying, you know. Just,
yeah.
But, you know, but this guy, man, he, not only did he, you know, engage me as a friend, but he let me look behind the veil of an organized church.
Sure.
So I got to see like that a glimpse of how a church works by being his friend. And I said, so a church can work, you know, in the context of integrity. And it can have a meaningful mission other than just gathering other people's money. And it can have a heart for a community.
Yeah.
And I saw all of that from hanging out with him.
Yeah.
Ultimately, in my fifth year on a pew, I became a Christian. And in that fifth year, accepted a call of ministry. And I don't know if I mentioned hadn't, but I'm a real estate guy. So what I've done my whole life is real estate.
Yeah.
You know, buy some, sell some, you know, build something occasionally. And I became his real estate broker.
There it is. Yeah.
So when time came to, you know, for him to expand, you know, I was part of that equation.
Yeah.
And one day he gave me the keys, Rusty, to an old dilapidated church in downtown Houston.
Yeah.
Yeah, St. John's. I remember him sending other ministers to look at it. They couldn't really see a mission personally for this place.
Yeah.
But the day I drove up on the curb, man, there were about 50 unhoused people hanging out about where we're sitting right now. It was a tree right about here. And that, you know, under that tree were about 50 guys waiting on a meal. I drive up in my car up to the curb. I look over, I see those guys. I look at the church, the building, and I picked up the phone, my cell phone, and I called my wife and I said, baby, this is the place. And I knew it in that moment, man.
Yeah.
Maybe June 1992, that God had brought me to this place. It was before I walked into the building. Brought me to this place for the work that would ultimately last this past 30 years.
That's amazing. And it's really interesting to hear how, again, all of those skills do transfer. Right? I imagine having done some real estate work, development, all that, you could see the potential of this space. And, you know, my journey is, there are some similarities. I wouldn't say it's a similar journey, but there are similarities for sure in that, you know, I very much was like, I kind of was drawn into the church on the early end. And so the business stuff started later.
Okay.
But, you know, what I found is that for me, I went to undergraduate, I went to graduate school, got a Master of Divinity, and was in the church the whole time, was serving in the church the whole time. And, you know, I would get up and try to preach and teach these people who are working real jobs, dealing with real problems. Well, let me tell you about school. Let me tell you about my homework that I had to do. Man. And I had no, I really just had no hard skills. I mean, a lot of soft skills, and I could hang out with people, I could talk and relate. But I think that kind of just knowing how the world works, how to make things happen, I just was completely lost. And that's been this kind of maybe second big chapter of my life. And I just think it's really interesting to see how your work on the front end then prepares you to come into a space like this and say, oh, I can do something with this.
Yeah.
Because a lot of those other leaders and pastors that might have looked at this, they really couldn't have. They weren't equipped to develop this into what it's become.
Yeah. Yeah. I think my skill set in the streets really sort of predestined what this church would become in terms of which demographic would fill the pews. You know, which is really interesting now in this post-COVID post-COVID period, who you know, who will constitute church attenders for the future?
Mm-hmm.
And it's really causing me to rethink what the future of the church looks like, mm-hmm. even for me.
Sure.
You know, at my age, I've lived longer than I have remaining.
Mm.
I don't get another 65 years.
Yeah, 120 something, 130, yeah.
Right, I don't get another 65. I say, so a buddy of mine said recently, you know, man, I want to make sure I'm maximizing my next 25 summers.
Yeah.
Okay, and I thought about that for a minute, and I said, you know what, 25 summers are cool, but there are 9 other months if you live in Houston, 8 other months if you live in Houston. So how about I maximize my next 25 years?
Yeah.
So Rusty, what that looks like for me is taking all of my related skills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so church, you and I were talking earlier, and preaching, you know, is one of those things that I also have mostly passed on.
Mm.
I've only preached one time a month for the last 30 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it wasn't the element of this work that mm-hmm. resonated with my heart yeah. and my being.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I tell people all the time that I lead from the middle of the room,
mm-hmm.
Not from the front of the room.
Mm-hmm.
And from the middle of the room, I also sort of endear a sort of fiercer loyalty.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of like gang leading. I mean, it's, you know, if you stand in the front of the room, somebody,
yeah.
you know, is going to hit you in the back of the head. Yeah,
right? For sure.
I mean, yeah. Yeah. Somebody's going to sneak up on you. But in this context, you know, I've decided to really commit these next few years of my journey to taking all of my skill sets. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, relationships, contacts all over the world,
mm-hmm.
You know, an understanding of how money works,
mm-hmm.
My knowledge of real estate, you know, understanding how the organization can move. And I've committed to employing that
mm-hmm.
to our nonprofit, the Bread of Life.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, which is you know, these last year we've made some amazing strides.
Yeah,
we're going to take the next year to build more capital. Mm-hmm. And take on some new projects.
So let's talk about Bread of Life, because that's obviously a big focus for
my life's work
this next season.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like there's probably more facets to it than what ends up on Instagram, right?
Yeah,
I think, right? Yeah, obviously you're serving meals to those that need them. And what else is Bread of Life look like these days?
Well, I'll tell you first, quick history, 30 years ago, Juanita and I started serving a hot meal
mm-hmm.
to our unhoused neighbors,
mm-hmm.
Just in the sanctuary.
Yeah,
once a week, few church members. Before we knew it, we were serving 500 a day.
Wow!
For the next 20 years,
which is telling, right?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Says a lot.
Crazy, and you know, that intersection with the unhoused community was mm-hmm. just has been pivotal for this community as mm-hmm. well. So we ended up building a sort of a soup kitchen, medical clinic,
mm-hmm.
Day room where homeless people could hang out.
Yeah.
And did that for a while.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 16, 17 years ago, started building housing.
Yeah.
Because housing in our opinion is a solution
yeah.
to homelessness. And right after Hurricane Ike, about 12, 14 years ago,
mm-hmm.
we really decided to move one of our nonprofits, the Bread of Life, towards disaster relief,
mm-hmm.
disaster recovery. But acknowledging that there were several forms of disaster. One
sure.
is weather events.
Yep.
All right. But then, you know, there are personal moments mm-hmm. that
certainly
feel like disaster as well.
Yeah, there was one of the things we used to talk about is I had mentioned when I was in Denver, there's this organization, part of a nonprofit there called Dry Bones, that they have a network coffee shop. Mm-hmm. And it's a coffee shop. It's really just a gutted out house where they serve essentially truck stop coffee, and there's a shower and
right.
you know, some basic supplies. And again, unhoused brothers and sisters are able to come in and just be unaccosted, mm-hmm. be here,
right.
sit there, just take a load off, and no one's going to worry, say anything about how you look or how you smell right. or anything. And we'd spent a lot of time in that community. And one of the realizations we had, just some friends and I having this conversation, is that any one of us, regardless of our background, regardless of our socioeconomic status or bank accounts, any of that, we are three, at most, three big events away from joining them on the street.
Three big events.
Three things can happen in a week. And yeah. just like that. And the more you get to know folks that have been through that experience, that's what you hear.
Exactly.
As I was a guy, I had a job, I had a family, I was doing this.
Right.
And bop, 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 one, two, three. And then now here I am. And now I'm stuck, and I, you know, and so, yeah, you learn a lot, but you were saying, so
yeah.
the disasters, the personal disasters that people experience as well, because they can very much be that, as you're driving along and boom, disaster.
Exactly. So we've decided to, with our Temenos CDC, mm-hmm. Build housing, mm-hmm. and we're in the process of completing our fourth project right now,
yeah.
Next door to the campus. Last year, the Bread of Life bought the church campus here, with a goal of taking the campus and repurposing.
Yeah,
you know,
not Sundays and Wednesdays.
Not Sundays.
You got five yeah. other days of the week.
Yeah, because you know,
in the daytime yeah, also
because churches changed.
Yeah,
who's coming to a building to worship God mm-hmm. is forever impacted as a result of. 2 years at home.
Sure.
Certainly. Forever impacted.
Yeah.
So so what we do with the sort of the capital improvements that have happened so far is going to really determine the future of how this faith community impacts the community around mm-hmm. us. And if you think about it, you know, we're predominantly an organization and a faith community of color. Mm-hmm. That owns real estate in the fourth largest central business district
yep.
in the country. And it's been a very intentional mm-hmm. move. We've done about $80 million in development so far.
Yeah.
Just on the real estate side, we've raised probably in excess of $100 million for our causes.
Mm-hmm.
And we're just getting started.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
I love that. And, you know, I've had a lot of people reach out to be a guest on this show, which is humbling. It's incredibly humbling that my meager show people want to sit here and have these conversations. And some of those have been, you know, very wealthy folks who've built this thing and they're a CEO and it kind of, maybe they're not, maybe just doing some press. It doesn't feel like they're too involved in the organization. But one of the reasons I want to talk with you, even at 65,
yeah, man,
is even with all the things you got going on, it doesn't seem like retirement
is
a goal or on the horizon. It seems like, yeah, you're in the middle of it. And you're like, we're just getting started. And I love that. And I think that, yeah, you are in the middle of this
journey. I'm in the middle of it. Yeah.
And
my wife and I are calling it rewiring.
Yeah.
Versus retiring.
I love that.
Yeah. You know, and what we get a chance to do every day is, so she's my teacher, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I've learned some of the most beautiful lessons from my wife.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing she's taught me lately is to answer the question, what would I love?
Mm.
Not who, you know, the who's are pretty clear.
Yeah.
But when we drill down into what it is we love, I think that's the only place we ultimately find fulfillment.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, over my lifetime, you know, I haven't had a whole lot of days where I haven't felt fulfilled.
Mm-hmm.
But those days that I haven't have been very critical days. Mm-hmm. And a couple of them have been near death.
Okay.
You know, but at the core of where I am right now, and based on what I understand about life, based on what I've learned mm-hmm. from a lot of bumping around,
yeah,
a lot of it, mm-hmm. is every morning I gotta wake up and ask the question, so what would I love about this day mm-hmm. if I could do exactly what I felt purposed to do?
Yeah.
And that's how I wake up every day. And I've awakened every day like that for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, so people say, man, you know, you don't, you know, first of all, I wouldn't have known you're a pastor. Well, I don't think that's a compliment.
Yeah. Yeah. It depends on who you ask, I guess. Yeah.
And, but I said, you know, primarily because I try to let my actions speak to the Jesus I committed my life to, mm-hmm. you know.
Certainly.
So in that, all of this stuff that we ultimately do, we do to the honor and glory of God, mm-hmm. you know, even though our funding comes from sometimes agencies and people and predicaments that would prefer we didn't, mm-hmm. you know, espouse that. We don't always have to espouse it for people to know
for sure
that we're faith connected.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, the journey ahead, Rusty, is, it's good, man. You know, at 65, you know, I've asked the creator for, 30 more, mm-hmm. you know? I said, these last 30 have been pretty cool.
Yeah, yeah.
What could I do with the next 30?
Certainly.
You know, and if I put that in perspective, man, I can see, one, having a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I have fun every day. Two, helping a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And three, learning some more lessons. Mm-hmm. Because that's when people stop living.
Yeah.
When they think there's nothing else to
learn.
That's
it. We've done it all.
Yeah.
Checked it off. This is it.
Man, I learned something.
The whole experience.
I learned something every day. I've you know, in talking to you before you hit record, mm-hmm. I learned a few things this morning. You know, and that is the essence of what makes us, you know, human and what brings us to life mm-hmm. is seeing the humanity of the person we're sitting in front of.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's what my daddy, as a non-believer, and ultimately became a believer in my seventh year here, that's one thing he really helped me do. And that was to find common ground with every human being I meet.
You certainly, yeah. It's there.
Yeah, very well.
It's there to find.
The wealthiest, like you mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. the wealthiest to the most disconnected financially mm-hmm. and economically and even emotionally.
Yeah.
And when you can do that, I guarantee you things can happen.
Absolutely. I think I can credit my mom for those lessons. I think that early on, and she worked really hard to give me a life that was markedly better than her experience growing up in so many ways. And she did. She busted her ass to do it.
Yeah.
To give me those opportunities. But I just really distinctly remember her talking about even going into kindergarten. She was mm-hmm. like, you know, listen, if there's a kid that's left out, how would you feel to be that kid? You know,
right.
be that one. And I think in there were just some lessons to say, everyone has a story.
Yeah.
So just be real quick, careful before you start judging.
Right.
Right. Because like,
right.
you don't know and you haven't been there. And I was talking to a friend yesterday who's a guest on the show, Haley, and she and I were just talking about how we've been really privileged to get to build relationships with a lot of different people.
Yeah.
And how I often think if I had all of these people at one table, I might be a little tense for them. I'd be right. like, I don't know how this is. I don't think this is going to pan out between the two of you.
Right.
But I am very grateful that I can sit at their tables
and
be totally comfortable and love them and say, hey, I understand that all the people that I love and serve and get along with may not get along with each other.
Yeah.
But it's a gift for me to be able to like break bread and be like, hey, you know, I love you and I don't agree with everything and that's okay. And I don't expect anybody to agree with me on everything because my ideas are bad.
Yeah.
you should not be agreeing with me on most things. My wife would attest to that. Well, I don't want to take up too much of your time. And again, thank you for all of this.
Good hanging out, man.
A lot of times I'll ask, you know, is there advice that you would give younger Rudy? You know, if it's Rudy at 23, you've built the thing. If you're just getting started out, what's what would you share to your younger self?
So a couple of years ago, a friend of mine, a guy named Jay Prince, he started Rap-A-Lot Records.
Okay.
Wrote a book called The Art and Science of Respect. Hmm. So I one Sunday I asked him, I said, hey, man, come and instead of a sermon, let's do an interview, kind of like this. Mm-hmm. And I put pictures from his book up on the screen. And one of the pictures was a picture of him in a high school cap and gown, the 18-year-old Jay Prince. Mm-hmm. This guy's made, you know, phenomenal money over these years. And, I mean, has experienced a lot of life. But I said, so what would you tell? What would the now successful, accomplished Jay Prince tell 18-year-old Lil James?
Yeah.
And he said, Paz, I would tell Lil James that you're going to live a lot longer than you thought you were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Live like you're going to live longer. So I said, man, that's profound advice.
It certainly is.
And what I would tell my younger colleagues is you're going to live a lot longer than you thought you were.
Yeah.
Live like you're going to become an older person one day.
Yeah.
So you can look back over those years and say, you know what? You know, those years served me. Mm-hmm. I think the second thing I would tell younger people who are on the move is to not be afraid to take risk. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not saying be foolish.
Sure.
I'm not saying be reckless, but I'm saying, you know, if you don't take any risk, you're guaranteed there will be no reward on the other side of that. So, so in the midst of risk taking, everything will not work out.
Yeah.
But those things that do work out, will work out amazingly. Mm-hmm. And to keep trying. And I think the third thing I would tell my younger colleagues is definitely believe in something other than yourself. Mm. You can get to the end of you pretty quickly.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just in capacity and every other aspect. I was thinking about it one day, about 3.5 years ago, when I thought about killing myself. And it was a time when I had a lot of good stuff happening. Mm-hmm. But I had one thing that was going really badly. Mm. You know, I mean, really badly. And it was that one thing that was going really badly that dominated my thought process in that moment. Mm-hmm. And I realized when I got to the other side of that one thing that dominated my thought process and I found myself still alive, that if I had ended my life when I thought
certainly
it was the end, I would have missed everything that would have followed it. So, you know, in the midst of taking those steps, everything won't necessarily always work out like you thought it would. But if you keep moving forward, you're going to look back and say, wow, what a great learning experience that was.
Yeah.
And that's what all of these experiences have been for me. So I look at the road ahead now and of course, you know, at 65, I don't have the same challenges that I had when I was 45 and 35 and 25 and 15. But my challenge now is to living out of what I would love every day.
Yeah. I had come across an interview with Juanita that was really beautiful, I think speaks to this. And again, your teacher, so I can hear her voice in your words already. as a good wife can do at times and many times. But she was talking about Dr. King's famous speech, Out of a Dream. And mm-hmm. she said, no, like the dream had him. Yeah. And she goes on to say, you know, pain can push you forward a little bit.
Right.
Can push you forward. And that's good at times. We need that. Sometimes we need a little pain to get us going. But a really captivating dream, a captivating vision will pull you forward.
Exactly.
And it will, and I think she goes on to say, it'll shape you into the person that can then make those changes and be those things and do those things. And so I think that so much of what you shared just now, I think it's about perspective.
It's about perspective. And that's the word.
Yeah. I think it's recognizing, there's a lot of that, at least a while ago, there was a whole lot of that YOLO, so we're just like, let's live it up, party. It's like, just remember though, you're probably actually going to live longer. So just think about some consequences here that you're going to have to live with for the rest of your life.
Exactly.
But then on the other side of that, if you're going to live longer, okay, sure. Try 20 businesses.
Right.
Let's talk to me when you hit 21.
Right.
What if you just set out and say, I'm going to start 21 businesses.
That's right.
Like if that was the goal, because you're like, I got a lifetime, I can do it, you know, one every couple of years, let's just give them a shot and see what turns out. I think that I don't know anybody that would start that way. So I'm going to do 21, maybe other than me. My wife is like, don't give him any ideas.
Don't give him an idea.
But, you're going to learn so much along the way and you get perspectives. And, I have a real estate situation right now that's, it shouldn't be going sideways, but it's going sideways. Mm-hmm. And like you said, maybe 12, 14 hours. That happened last night. And so even today, driving here, it's just starting to consume my thoughts, mm-hmm. right? I've been excited about our conversation for so long. And I'm on the drive here. What am I thinking about? I've got to say it this way. If I'm going to, do I need to have this tone with this guy? And
yeah, man.
Just take a breath. It'll be all right.
Yeah.
We're gonna make it through this. It'll be another day.
Make it to tomorrow.
We'll figure it out.
You know, Judas, one of Jesus's friends, ended his life prematurely. Mm-hmm. And my big lesson from that was to never make a bad day your last day.
Mm.
So never make a permanent decision in the context of a difficult moment.
Mm-hmm.
And how often do we do that?
Oh,
too often.
So reactionary.
So reactionary. But I think we continue to move forward and continue to remember that there's still another day.
Absolutely. I love that. Maybe my last story. We can get into it. A bunch of storytellers together.
That's right.
Boy. I was in. This will be all day. Somebody order dinner. I was in. So I mentioned I was in seminary, in graduate school, and then some people asked me some very just simple, straightforward questions that kind of shattered my whole ego and persona that I had assembled for myself. And then I'd also faced an academic rigor that I had never really faced mm-hmm. before. I'd always just kind of coasted through school. Like I could just show up and be like, I'll get a B. I don't have to do much.
Right.
Again, ego, all of it. And for the first time learning Hebrew, I was like, I can't just like bullshit my way through this. I actually have to know this. Like you're talking. and so I'm start failing Hebrew. My life's falling apart. My identity's all in crisis and all this stuff. And I walk into one of my counselor's offices like, I'm quitting. I'm out.
Yeah.
I'm done. It's like, there's nothing you could do. And to Laura Flanders' credit, I doubt Laura listens to this, but if she ever did, shout out Laura. She said, okay, that's fine. You can quit. Go ahead, quit. It's like, but I want you to swear to me that before you quit, you'll go talk to the president of the seminary.
Mm.
Right. And you won't do anything until then. So just as soon as you get an appointment with him, talk to him, let him know what your plans are. And then you can quit.
Right.
I swear to you that I'll do nothing, make no won't act on anything, but I'm quitting, Laura. I'm done. Yeah. And I'm going to go talk to him. So walk over to his office from her office. It's like, I'd like to see Mark Young, please. And the secretary's like, yeah, okay. Well, the first appointment he has in about 6 weeks. So yeah, we'll set you up an appointment for 6 weeks. And I think what happened is I think I walked to the office, she called and said, do not set an appointment for this year with this young man for another 6 weeks. Right. So that he has to just push through. This,
right.
And that was the end of the semester. So and again, I always want to be a man of my word. So I was like, she tricked me. But I'm not going to quit because I told her I wouldn't right. until I talked to this guy. And by the time, I think they were able to find an earlier appointment. But by the time that I talked to him, I'd cooled down a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'd gotten through a little bit of it.
Yeah.
And I got through and I withdrawed from the class I was failing. And right. I came back another semester and did well. And it, all that to say of like those moments, you're like, I'm done.
Right.
I quit.
Right.
I'm out of
right.
it. And to have those people in your yeah. life, they're just like, take a beat. Just
right.
take a beat. It'll, you know, again, let's talk about it tomorrow.
Right.
Just meet me here and we'll talk about tomorrow. And I think that's a gift. Well, again, we can do this all day, but thank you for your wisdom.
Russ,
I'd love out, to man. Talk more about the tacos and the coffee and all of it. But I think that you sharing a little bit of your journey is going to be a real encouragement to a lot of people, as it already has been for me. So yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you, man.
A huge thank you to Rudy and to you for listening to this episode of Houston Made. Rudy is just an amazing guy, and he has really just touched Houston and influenced this city in so many ways, and it was a privilege to get to sit down and talk with him. If you haven't done so already, go find Rudy on Instagram at Rudy Rasmus. Stop by Through Good Coffee for some excellent espresso next time you're down in the Heights. And check out Bread of Life to see how you can come alongside a great organization to help out some of our less fortunate brothers and sisters here in Houston. You can learn more about Bread of Life at their website, breadoflifeinc.org, or follow them on Instagram at breadoflifehtx. This is your first time tuning in. We have interviews available with entrepreneurs from all kinds of backgrounds, including tattoo artists, leather workers, ice sculptors, and more. So be sure to check out those. If you're interested in connecting further, you can find me on Instagram at Rusty J. Gates or the show at Houston Made Podcast. Houston Made is produced and hosted by me, Rusty Gates. A special thanks goes out to Luke Bronner with Million Media for continued support of the show and to Mac Ryan Creative for collaboration on our artwork. Credit for our theme music goes to Old Friends, New Friends. And Houston Made is glad to be a part of the Milieu Media neighborhood of podcasts and storytellers. We are people who care deeply about human connection, and in our neighborhood, we find that connection by hearing and appreciating one another's stories and by sharing our own. To find more shows made by amazing storytellers from all kinds of backgrounds, visit milieumedia.com.